With Renault, official car partner of the GAA, driving passion for sport and communities throughout Ireland and abroad.
We may not be able to get in on the sporting action like we're used to, but we can get in on some exclusive offers from Renault. To celebrate their second year as official car partner of the GAA, Renault is offering a range of special offers on their new and used vehicles, exclusive to all GAA club members. So now you can take home the win right to your door. Check out Renault.ie/GAA to find out more.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, then.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Listen back to England.
And so it is that the expected came to pass. Mayo were brilliant in patches. They were brave and committed and chiselled out some great scores. But Dublin are outstanding. They showed again why they are the greatest team in the history of Gaelic football. They sliced Mayo open for 2 goals and showed the composure of champions in the endgame. Hello, everyone. You're very welcome to the Irish Examiner Gaelic Football Show. My name is Paul Rouse and I'm joined here today, as usual, by Oisín McConville, the former Armagh footballer, and by Ciarán Sheehan, the Cork footballer. And we're also joined by special guest, former Mayo manager Stephen Rochford, who is currently coach and selector with Donegal. We'll be reviewing the full championship in a while, but we are, of course, going to start with the final. Ciarán, why did Dublin win?
I suppose the same things were standing out that we were kind of talking about Dublin all year, really. Power, pace, physicality, down the middle, going at Mayo, and goals. The 2 goals just proved vital at crucial times. We talk about, composure, leadership, decision-making, all these different elements, that are associated with this Dublin team. But what was evident was, even when Mayo seemed to rattle Dublin, particularly on Dublin's kickouts, and even when Mac Dade went off, there was still the composure to just, as you said before, stick to the process, no signs of panic whatsoever, doing the simple things right. Even around midfield, when that long kickout was going out and Mayo were getting on top, they still, set up really well defensively. There was no way Mayo were going to get a goal. And it was impressive to watch it unfold. But again, nothing that we hadn't seen before, But I suppose I mentioned last week about winning moments in the game. And there was a couple of them. In particular, I suppose the one that really stood out for me was a kickout, a Mayo kickout. And John Small was up against Aidan O'Shea. And he just made it his, dying ambition to disrupt the kickout and get the ball to ground. And in turn, Aidan, gave away a free kick and it's a score for Dublin. And I thought that was just a crucial time in the game. And I thought that, it was moments like that I mentioned last week that Mayo needed to win. Unfortunately, they didn't, another example was probably the Fitzsimons one with Keegan, even though, arguably a free, but certainly a moment in the game that I know, Dublin would have got energy from. But look, I suppose another facet was probably the midfield dominance. We spoke about it last week, but I thought, for all the ball Mayo had in that first half, I think the last quarter of the game, I thought Brian Howard, when he came in, was excellent. Made a big difference. Fenton caught a ball, like a couple of big balls, as did John Small. I thought that aerial dominance kind of started to show, particularly in the last quarter. And look, I suppose, as you said, you could go through it and analyze it all day, but it was those key moments in the game, but also the composure, the decision making, and particularly even the younger guys, that really kind of, like Paddy Small on numerous occasions, a guy that would really go at a player. He did it a couple of times, but he had the nose to, turn it around and just pop that simple ball back to Kilkenny or Conor Callan, who was waiting behind him. I just think it was evident throughout the whole game that efficiency allowed Dublin to always kind of just come back into the game and increase the gap.
Oisín, you were at the match. We'd spoken a lot about the matchups last week. Will you talk us through the matchups, and is there anything that surprised you in the matchups?
Well, I suppose the matchups weren't the matchups that we thought of last week. So, first thing is to hold our hands up and say, you know, we got a lot of them wrong. But the most interesting ones for me were the Kilkenny one, obviously, which Barrett went on to Kilkenny, Oisin Mullen went on to Conor Callaghan. We end up giving Conor Callaghan man of the match, but I thought Oisin Mullen was really good.
Especially in the first half.
Yeah, I really enjoyed his performance, you know. Matchups in the middle of the field were weird. Dermot O'Connor went on Brian Fenton to begin with, and then they seemed to swap after the first water break, or maybe even shortly after that. And Rowan went on to Fenton, and Dermot O'Connor went on to McCarthy. But I'm not sure how that switch came around, because I actually thought that O'Connor was doing a serious job on Fenton early on. I don't know if they were more worried then about McCarthy, and that's the problem. Do you know what I mean? You plug one hole and another one starts to spill out. So,
and the Mayo match, or the Dublin matchups on Mayo, were kind of interesting as well in the back line.
Well, Fitzsimons went on O'Connor, and he really, really struggled. You know, he struggled really badly, I thought. And then there was a switch made. I can't even remember who ended up.
Davey Byrne was there for a while as well, wasn't he?
Davey Byrne went on to Killian O'Connor towards the end of the game, yeah. But I think there was a switch even in between that. So that didn't surprise me that the matchup, it just surprised me how poorly and how easy Killian O'Connor was getting room. But I thought Mayo's matchups were good. I think give us those statistics from the game. Give us those statistics when we talked on Thursday. 214. Yeah, I'll take that. How good Mayo were in their own kickouts for most of the game. And how they absolutely dismantled Cluxton's kickouts and for the first, whatever, 40 minutes or whatever it was. Give me all of those things and I'd snap your hand off. So I think Mayo got a lot of things right. And sometimes, you know, in order to analyze a game, you sort of have to forget about the result almost for a second. So, as I say, if you were giving Mayo all of those things before the game, I think they had one wide in the first half, but they had three or four in the keeper's hands, and they were killer moments. The Matthew Rowan one, and when you're dominating possession against Dublin, it reminded me. We played in an All-Ireland semi-final in 2000 against Kerry, and we absolutely owned the ball, owned it for 35 minutes. And I think we went in maybe a point up, or it was a draw, I'm not sure. But we paid the price heavily for that, because when we were on top of them, we just weren't making the most of the chances. It sort of reminded me a little bit of that, even as it was happening in front of me eyes. Mayo got so many things right, and they get in and around them, and they didn't take one backward step, none of them. And I thought it was a very manly and courageous performance from Mayo. And I hope that doesn't sound patronising, because that's not the way it's meant. It's meant to be, in fact, anything but patronising. But they just didn't have the stuff to finish it off. I looked at the bench. And the bench is not bad. You know, if you think of Carr coming off the bench and Cohen, those two guys played, like, Carr started last year in the league final as well. And he had a pretty good game for, again, 35, 40 minutes. So I thought they had a little bit of strength and depth, but big calls. I still come back to it, and I know we didn't have enough time yesterday to talk about it, but the big calls went against Mayo and were massive in the game. That, like, the Fitzsimons one, you know, it's a free, right, first and foremost, but it's possibly a sending off. If it happens on the other end of the field, I think there's a good chance it's a sending off, and that's how strongly I feel about it, because because we're like I've seen tackles very similar to that being punished at club level this year, and the referee will come to you and he'll say, "Listen, it's dangerous play." Do you know what I mean? And
it was an inexplicable decision, though, wasn't it? Because it's not...
Not to give the free. Yeah, not to
like
give the free.
He didn't... If we leave aside whether it's a red card or a yellow card or not, but it's not just that he didn't give the free. He saw, because he was blindsided and didn't see the incident. He waved as if to say, this is fine. So he sanctioned the tackle the way he went about it, from what I could see of it. It was kind of extraordinary.
Yeah, and you can't say he hadn't kept up with the play. He was... Like he was a couple of yards away from it.
Yeah.
You know? But I just thought that call in particular went against him. And I thought Johnny Cooper could have had a black card as well. No, it's not as definitive as the tackle on Lee Keegan, but it's still a major moment in the game. If Simons even gets a black card, you know, they're down to 13. Albeit for 2 minutes, but I still think that makes a huge difference. I think in the second half, you know, just go back to the matchups. In the second half, they put James McCarthy on to Kevin McLaughlin, and he just run him. You know, and Kevin McLaughlin wasn't really in the game anyway, but they obviously had targeted him at half time, and they put McCarthy over on him, and McCarthy never bothered with him really at all. You know, he picked him up, all right, but he. His intent was to get forward and influence the game going the other way.
The 10 minutes after halftime, Stephen, it wasn't the same as last year in the semi-final where Dublin blitzed with goals and points, but it was definitive, really, in the context of the match.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, watching it, you were saying these boys have gone through this scenario umpteen times in training. You know, you can just picture them in DCU, you know, making the pitch as big as possible, using Stephen Cluxton as the 14th outfield player. And they were just sucking down the clock. They were able to play it. I do think at that time, you know, Mayo's inability to win possession and probably create restarts, you know, played against them. And a big part of that was I thought, you know, when Oshie was talking there about the success that Killian was getting inside, I thought a lot of that came from the first half that Ryan O'Donoghue was getting at centre forward. I thought he caused absolute havoc. And Dublin really struggled, I think, into the water break. Now, again, not being at the game, I felt that maybe they might have pushed out Owen Merchant maybe at the water break to pick him up, and it sort of they had a good battle, and then either Ryan ran out of steam, or you know as Dublin suffocated them with the ball, and in that then that we weren't as constructive from the middle of the field, and Dublin just got into a case of holding the ball, getting guys into the game. Brian Howard obviously took up a much more strong position, having come on at halftime. And as Oisin alluded there, the likes of James McCarthy and Brian Fenton also in that middle third just started to really physically impose themselves. And that's what Dublin can do. And I think, you know, when Mayo will look back on it, they'll see this as certainly a missed opportunity, and because holding Dublin to 16 scores, appreciate 216 is 20 points, but Dublin didn't score for the last 15 minutes of the game. Mayo only scored once in the final quarter, and in that they still had plenty of ball. As you said, we had 3 or 4 balls into the goalie's hands in the first half, and we had another 3 in the second half, then 7 shots. Not alone, you're not missing them, but you're giving Dublin easier restarts. Because you're not getting time to set up on the kick-out, which they had good good value from, and they had good opportunities to get their structure right. And then the likes of the Killians and the Aidens and the Tommy Conroys, James Kerrs, they're now having to run back the field to try and get a defensive shape, and it's just taking energy from the team.
Well, I think we called the Tommy Conroy one the other day, and we said the game might swallow him up. And that's sort of what happened. And do you know if they could have got him into the game? Do you know, there was a couple of I sort of felt sorry for him because he got the ball a couple of times. And he was just suffocated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He wasn't able to get that shot off, and then he tried to force one, he was blocked, and confidence started to drain from him a little bit, and then obviously, you know, they take him off because, you know, they can't keep hoping that it's going to happen. But, you know, like, Tommy Conroy, like, I just think it was it's very unforgiving, I think. You know, when we analyse this, we have to realise the likes of Ryan O'Donoghue, Oisin Mullen, McLaughlin, Conroy. We have to realise how young these guys are. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know about you guys when you were starting out in your inter-county career, but I wasn't playing in All-Ireland final.
I'm still waiting, Oisin.
it might happen. You never know. But you know, I would have said that when I look at the way they've been introduced at this stage, I would have said my introduction to inter-county senior football was a breeze. Do you know what I mean? Because, as I say, you know, it's the microscope. Do you know what I mean? It's I think some people who analyse the game have no appreciation for just how young these guys are, how these guys are still finding their feet. It's just very, very unforgiving. And I felt sorry for a few of them yesterday because, as I say, like, we're talking about baptism, I know they've played, but in that scenario, when the Dubs are putting you under that huge pressure and every little mistake is punished, like, oh, McLaughlin leaving the ball behind him, and he coughed up a few balls in the second half, and then obviously Tommy Conroy not getting into it. Ryan O'Donoghue, yes, he was on the ball, I made a few mistakes, dropped one short as well, I think, but it's just very, very unforgiving. I mean, like, think how
you think it was a mistake, though, lads. Do you think it was a mistake that Colin Boyle, Donny Vaughan, Keith Higgins, Tom Parsons, and Seamus O'Shea, who are in the squad, what would they have done in the last 15 minutes of that game?
Stephen can verify it, but I don't know if Seamus O'Shea is fit or not. Surely if he was fit, he'd be straight in the middle of the field. That's what I thought. I just presumed he wasn't fit.
I think when you saw it, I think Tom Parsons was the midfield cover as such, and then obviously Dermot starting the team also provided cover, and Aidan maybe going to the middle of the field. So maybe carrying two midfielders on the bench probably doesn't add up in the numbers wise. I was probably surprised that Keith Higgins didn't show for maybe the last 25 minutes or so. Just his pace, you know, three or four of those runs. So that's it. I think, you know, Cullum obviously has been recovering from a cruciate injury from the earlier part of the year, and just probably hasn't just had a run. So yeah, I do think, you know, that you know, and Dublin obviously had retirements, but Brendan Harrison, Jason Doherty as well were two big losses for a team that don't have as wide a pool. And
Paddy Durkin at halftime.
Massive, yeah, you know. So when you're looking at three or four of those, as I'm not saying all of them should start, but it might give you a mix there with some of those young guys that were playing in their first games, just to be able to ask different questions of Dublin. But we certainly didn't get the same punch off the bench that Dublin got.
Ciarán, is Conor Callaghan the best forward in Gaelic football?
Yes, I would say he's in the top three best Gaelic footballers in the country.
Who else is there?
Kilkenny's there with him in my eyes. Clifford. I'm being very forward biased there in relation to
they're the best three forwards, we'll say, in Gaelic football.
I would say at the moment, based on what I've seen, but again, this year was a strange year in terms of preparation and how guys were going to come on and improve. Well, what I'd say about Dublin is I thought they'd done it really well. And we touched on this over the last couple of weeks as well, around how their team can play in any position, right? The defenders, even the forwards at this point, are comfortable out the field. And I thought they used that really well yesterday. I thought their ability to get guys in mismatches as such throughout the game. You know, I found that in the second half, I thought Killian O'Connor was playing very, very deep. Just wasn't close to goal where, you know, he's so deadly. I thought they brought him out and kind of kept him out as far as possible. You saw Davey Byrne was almost playing, you know, in the Dublin attacking half at times. Even for the goal, even for the first goal, you know, that was a planned move. There's no doubt about it. You know, James McCarthy's leg speed versus Aidan O'Shea, you know, is that something that's going to cause him trouble? It did. And I think that was something they identified. But throughout the game, I thought they're able to move between, you know, different positions. They're able to confuse guys, you know, and then Mayo's inexperience. They probably identified that. And they thought, you know, let's test these guys. Let's test these younger guys. Now, to be fair, I thought, as Oisin said, you know, Oisin Mullen, to be fair, I thought he looked very, very comfortable. And I thought he was very comfortable throughout the whole game, to be honest. But, you know, the likes of McLaughlin, maybe, you know, it's an All-Ireland final, you know, haven't been there before. You know, Tommy Conroy, you know, it's a very difficult position to be in. But I thought Dublin exploited that in relation to moving guys around, you know, getting guys to areas that they're not totally comfortable in. And likewise, if you try to do that to Dublin, they're comfortable in every position. And that's just the reality of where Dublin are at the moment.
I'll pose another question here. Brian Howard, when the minute Brian Howard came on the pitch, it was a different game. How is Brian Howard not starting on the Dublin senior football team?
Well, my understanding is I think he picked up a bit of a back injury during the summer. And I think it really influenced his ability to be able to train when they came back. And I think he sort of was, they were just bringing him. I think a fit Brian Howard makes that team all day long. Yeah. And himself and Niall Scully offer that sort of, they sort of offer nearly like, they become nearly like four midfielders then with Howard and Scully coming in there. And they're able to link and they're able to cover the halfbacks getting forward. And then by them coming that little bit deeper, that creates the natural space for Conn and for Kieran Kilkenny and Rock and a Mannion or a Paddy Small. And, you know, you're able to, you know, you're typically able to know this stuff, having watched them a couple of times, and it's still very difficult to put up the roadblocks against it. And I think the big thing that happened as well with Brian Howard coming in is that it now gave Mayo another difficulty in relation to the kickout, and that all of a sudden they had the ability to push James McCarthy and Fenton and Howard into different positions for the kickout. And two like there was a couple of big moments, and Kieran spoke about them earlier, but there was two fetches, one from Brian Fenton and one by Brian Howard over underneath the Cusick side, which were just really sort of, for us, you're sort of saying, oh, you know, you just wanted to see that ball breaking and it becoming a scrap and just trying to chip away. But there were just two big moments in the game. And Dublin, I think, you know, their fingerprints were all over the big moments in the game. You know, we've spoken about the two goals, obviously, were big. The Mick Fitzsimons hit was the big moment in the game. The rights and wrongs of it are another debate as such. And those two primary possession moments sort of coming in towards the final stretch. If Mayo were going up and fetching those and coming on the front foot, that would just, you know, you'd pull the half back line with you in relation to attacking. But Dublin just sort of were able to hold it. And you could see they took them as marks, they settled things out, and they just went through their routine again.
If we have acknowledged here for many weeks the skills of the Dublin footballers and just how talented a team they are, can I talk to you about their defensive nature, the manner in which they defend? And I'll ask the question whether you think they've become more defensive over the last couple of years and again this year.
I wouldn't say they've become more defensive. What I would say is they've got more structure in their defense now. They're more organized. They still attack. There's no doubt about it. But what I'd say is they've really tightened up their structure. They have a clear idea of what their role is, and they just go ahead and play it. So what I mean by that was, like, when they're playing at that level, the level they're playing at, discipline becomes a huge factor in your positioning, in how you tackle, you know, when you're playing at that level. And I just thought discipline to hold our shape, you know, at the right time, discipline to be the man to call a merchant back in to fill that hole, communication between, you know, Cluxton, as Oisín touched on before, you know, Cluxton's probably unrelenting kind of, you know, communication with the six defenders all the time. And that, you do that over time, it becomes a habit. And I feel like, you know, this year in particular, now over the last number of years, but defensively this year, even though we touched on it might be a weakness for Dublin this year, it turned out it was actually the opposite, where they've just really gelled and they know their role and they go out and they execute it. And there's no questions asked. And that's something that's really stuck out for me in Dublin, and how they've pulled it all together. They're very organised, very structured, and they deliver on it.
I think it's very much risk reward with them as well. I think they recognise the opportunities for turnovers. If that turnover's not happened, they get bodies behind the ball. At one stage in the first half, they had 15 men inside their own half, and this has gone on now some time. They had a steep learning curve themselves, because they got called a couple of times. You know, people were saying, you know, they're the ultimate football team, and maybe when you start listening to that, reading it, that, you know, they were playing a little bit more cavalier, but the defensive structure, like Niall Scully, I couldn't believe how vocal Owen Marchand is on the pitch as well, and how he organises a lot of things. I didn't see that one. I've never seen that one before, but just how much organisation he did, and how important he is to the whole structure of things.
Stephen.
I do you know what? Watching the game last night, I actually thought defensively they were really good in the first half. And I just thought that the place that they were struggling most was that centre forward, centre back area. I thought that's where, like, if you sort of break it down, they had I think three blocks in the first half from defenders. They had three or four really good turnovers where they got the numbers in as well. I think when you take away, you know, if you sort of compare sort of last year, and you're sort of saying, or any previous years, you know, Killian won one or two marks yesterday, and in a situation that where the mark wasn't in it, he's probably getting bottled up. There's a second defender getting in there very, very quickly. It doesn't become a shot away. And in that, I thought that where Dublin were probably weren't at their best in the earlier part yesterday. I didn't think they seemed to be running as fluidly up front. Didn't think that they had three or four wides before Mayo had any wide, and it looked a little bit rushed. So for me, a team that goes through the championship not having conceded a goal yesterday, I think that they probably didn't even concede a goal chance. You know, Stephen Cluxton certainly didn't make a save, and then that might even be the same for the Cavan game semi final. I think it's not that I think that they've become more defensive. I think they've even sort of nearly become better defenders. And they've obviously always been comfortable in the situations in which they're left one-on-one. But then they have a system that has evolved out of the defeat in 2014. And now they have the fluidity of being able to put in their plus one. As you said, Oisín, that seems to have been Owen Merchant a bit more this year. It's been Johnny Cooper. It's been Keane O'Sullivan. It'll be Brian Finton. You know, and that's testament to the flexibility and the personnel that they have.
And with all the goodwill in the world, they have a couple of horrible individuals playing defence as well, which helps. Every team needs them, you know?
Yeah, there's nothing soft about them.
Horrible as a footballer. I mean,
yeah, like
respectfully speaking.
Yes.
Well, it's a common. There's a ruthlessness about their defence as well, which is undeniable. And it's kind of hidden by this talk of all their skills, but there is a ruthless streak in them, and they do what they believe that's necessary to do to win. Can I ask you, Stephen, as a coach of Donegal, is there anything from yesterday's game, either in what you saw of Dublin or in the innovations such as they were that Mayo brought to the game, that you can see a pathway that six in a row will not become seven or eight in a row? Is there anything that you can say that you would take from it?
Well, I think, you know, the one thing about it is, and I think I might have heard you, Oisín, talking about between in different lead up, and not necessarily just, but there's the ability to sort of, you have to create a chaos, and certainly a chaos around the middle third of the field. You got to make it uncomfortable, and that's not about, that's not a, you know, that's not any coaching manual as such. But you have to make it uneasy, and then, you know, out of the ball that you'll win and the possession that you'll win, you need to be respectful of it, and you need to then close out your attacks. Like, I think Mayo, for all the good that they were doing, they left just too many balls in Stephen Cluxton's hands. Like, there was six or seven, that really sucks the energy out of you. But what you need to do, and it's absolutely respect Dublin going into the game, but you can't respect them on the field, if you know what I mean. And again, I mean that with all the respect, but you just can't stand back. You have to go at them. You have to match them up. You have to get physical with them. You have to ask all the questions. You got to make it dirty, a kick out time. You got to really hurt getting to those breaking balls. And that makes any team uncomfortable. No team, the Barcelona's of the days, the All Blacks in their pomp. Nobody likes it when you're dictating the terms. And that I think has to be the first thing that you strive to do if you're going to look to unsettle. Will it beat them? Well, it hasn't proven that it has yet. But I think as teams get better then with their skill approach, then that hopefully then is what then tops it off. But the key ingredient is you got to make this ugly on the opposition.
When I was just looking at it, I was actually thinking that in my head, you know, how do you beat this team? And I'd love to just know where they've done this thing in Australia over the last couple of years, right? In Australian rules football, about they release GPS data, live data throughout a game when you're watching the game. So you get your, you know, who's around the most kilometers, you know, at what pace. And I'd love to, we're never going to get access to it, I don't think, but what their physical condition is like in relation to their fitness. Are they, you know, I know everyone's talking about, you know, teams being at that level fitness-wise and, you know, Mayo, you know, are at that level, but are they really in relation to, you know, when the game's in a melting pot, you know, how much more do they have left in them? And I get by design and structure and how Dublin wear you down by holding possession, things like that, it takes it out of you. But are Dublin players doing an extra, you know, 3-4K on average across the game? And that's something I think teams, like, you have to question. I think every year teams have to question where their fitness is at and is it at the level. But I just think every time I go out and see Dublin, I just think they're running. Like, even Oisín mentioned there about, you know, having 15 behind the ball and then all of a sudden they turn it over and their shape, their forwards are actually almost back in their, you know, 2-2 shape or, you know, ahead of the ball. So it's a case of just ripping back down the ground once they return over the ball. And all of a sudden, you know, they're able to do that, get the ball and kick it over the bar, you know, whilst, you know, running that much. And it's just something that I stood out to me yesterday. And even around another thing around pressure acts, which I define as, you know, a block, a tackle, a chase, you know, winning a breaking ball, whether they have a system that actually, you know, defines their pressure acts individually. So they get a rating on, you know, how many chases did you make? How many times did you corral a man down the line? You know, every time you do one of those, it's a tick. And is there a number, we'll say 80 pressure acts as a team that will get you over the line and see you throughout the game? And is that number something they're all chasing individually or as a team? And I think a lot of what they do and how they play is based on pressure. And I don't know if it's not really talked about a whole lot, but I think they value it quite highly within that group. And that's something I think other teams are chasing, is that type or that level of pressure. And I think it's just they're kind of two things that really stood out, like, you know, in relation to chasing Dublin and getting to where they're at. But maybe it sounds too easy to say it out loud, but I certainly think it's something that they've really kind of perfected almost at this stage.
Yeah, well, take it to the soft Hurley boys, and when they're doing stats, like, it's hooks and blocks, you know, that they, a lot of that determines of how hard the team's walking. With us on the GPS, I remember a number of years ago, Stephen, a GPS figure was released. Now, not the information, but not the actual, not a picture of it or anything, but we were told that Damon O'Connor had run 16.2 kilometers or something in a backdoor game in Castlebar. Now, I remember going to Tony Mack and asking him, now Tony grunted at me, so I didn't know if that was a yes or a no, but there's a guy called Shamey McGeown, you've probably met him with Tony a couple of times, and he's athletics background, and he tried to explain to us how that was impossible, that he could do that. But GPS would be something that I would love to have a wee look at. And it's something that they used to do it in Champions League matches and used to release it. And but there's no way there's 3 or 4 kilometres difference in them. But if it's a kilometre with 15 players, do you know what I mean? If this is the sort of thing that adds up.
I would say it's what I mentioned there was, total, sorry around high speed running, you know, that's yeah. something that I know teams really look at, but you know, is there even, you know, 600 to a kilometer difference in that is substantial, you know, throughout the game. Sorry, so just yeah.
So like when you're looking at that, they're first of all, 16 kilometers, not if he was there for a month with all the finest supplements he could give.
That was the lift into the match.
Everybody I met was saying that, and so I went to Shamey and he broke it down, and it meant running full speed at doing 200 meters in 30 seconds on the loop. You know,
yeah, you weren't allowing him have even half time, to keep going. And in that as well, even to logically think about it, all the stops in a game, you know, a substitution, all of those break up that aspect. But like what you're saying there, don't think there's 2 or 3 kilometers certainly in it, but in the high speed running, that's a big thing. I do think. We're not going to get into this, but Croke Park has a part to play in your ability to hit the high-speed running elements. And also, I think on their conditioning element about it, they're all very athletic. I know that's a little bit of a sort of cliche, but they've all got pace. And in that, you know, be it Davy Byrne being stood up in the corner, I think they have a great ability to be able to find their way out of there one-on-one. Just be able to drop a shoulder and go by a guy. And that's a key part to be able to get out. And then you obviously have like Cluxton then comes and helps you. But there isn't much between teams on the condition. I think, you know, down in Cork, they have been making big inroads. I think Keane O'Neill and the guy that's just back from Stad, I think it will make massive inroads in that Cork squad. Yeah. Ken Smith, big athletic boys will start to eat up ground. I think Donegal, Galway's, Mayo's, all those teams, it's something that's sort of within your control. And I think that's something that the teams are going to continue to push on. And Dublin obviously had set the template, but they'll continue to catch up on that one.
More great news for Intercounty players.
No, well, I was just thinking about this. Is this conversation? Do you think the game has become less joyous? So on Saturday in the Irish Times, Keith Duggan asked a question about whether it has all become too serious. And I'll read you what he wrote. And I think Oisin in particular, I'd like you to reflect on what he has to say here. He said, when teams from the 70s and the 80s and the 90s meet for reunions, the bar remains their port of call. The session is their refuge. You have to wonder if the teams of today will, in 25 years' time, have for their reunion a triathlon weekend somewhere sunny, followed by a sit-down in a juice bar. It's true that habits change. A generation of players, arguably starting with Kieran McGeaney's Armagh, came along and demanded a culture of totalitarianism from everyone in the group. Do you feel, Oisin, that you're to blame for taking a lot of the fun out of football?
Yeah, I think that and defensive football. I think.
Well, I mean, that's your fault as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Between ourselves and Tyrone, we started the defensive stuff and then we took a lot of the fun out of it. Like, it's not my fault the geezer doesn't smile. Like Benny Tierney used to say, geezer does smile. He smiles first thing in the morning because he wants to get it out of the way and get on with the rest of his day. But I don't think that that would be the case. You know, that these modern teams, when they move on and do whatever they do after they play and they get together again, I think it'll be the same. I think they'll get together in a social environment. And I think I wouldn't agree. My thinking on this at the moment is that as much as we want to believe that inter-county players are slaves and all the rest of it, I did read they were described as slaves at one stage, but these guys are enjoying it. I mean, I know a lot of club teams who are back doing a little bit of training, and a lot of club teams who are back doing a little bit of training is at the behest of the players. The players want to get back and they want to do stuff because, well, it's particularly at the moment, there's damn all else to do. But
your lads back training.
I think players are enjoying it. I think players are enjoying it more than you know. I think there was more joy in Dublin yesterday than a lot of people would suggest. And those Mayo players are devastated. But you know what? They're going to come back because they want to taste that. If you continue to get that close, eventually that door is going to open for you. And I played on an Armagh team that couldn't open that door. And eventually, lucky enough, in 2002, we went through the year. We had no injuries. We had the bounce of the ball, all those sort of things. We won in All Ireland, and that's effectively why players play the game. But that doesn't mean that it defines everything about them. Not to win in All Ireland or not to win things. It doesn't matter what sport you have. You have to have teams who are striving to do that. And I think once we have that, I think there'll be plenty of joy in Gaelic football. But I wouldn't agree that the joy's gone out of it completely.
Yeah, I don't either. But where is the future of football? Like where is the game going based on what you've seen in this year's championship? Like, is the game changing? Have there been tactical innovations this year?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, football has been stagnant for some time. I think every year brings something different. I suppose the one thing that probably has maybe got out of hand a little bit is teams striving for bigger players, you know, fitter players. I said a couple of years ago that I think it might even have been worse at one stage because I think bar Ray and McHugh, you know what I mean? And he was salvation for all small footballers playing all over the country, was that it was possible. But I think, you know, this thing of getting bigger, stronger, faster, I think it's time to sway more towards the athleticism. Yes, you have to be strong, but you don't have to be big and strong. You have to be fit to raid the tackles. The most important thing is you need to have the endurance to get through a season, you know, to not pick up those injuries. And like, If you consider how much sports science has had an effect on the game, the biggest thing I would say is that, you know, like, I remember first year in lacrosse, and that's not that long ago, can't remember, it's first year managed myself and John, I think we had 17 hamstring injuries, and we went about how we were going to sort that out. Do you know what I mean? First of all, the club were going mental about physio bills, but we had to sort that out. So we had to take it away and we had to get somebody to cater for that, to help us with warm-ups, all those sort of things. But sports science has helped that because, like, many hamstring injuries that we see now, and it's usually the older players who are picking up these niggly injuries. The niggly injuries don't seem to be keeping players out of the game in the way it used to. So that's the way I see it developing. But I think, you know, there is there'll be a strong sway towards more athleticism rather than getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
I think the big thing there, Paul, is that the key ingredient for it is speed. Speed now, I think, is the main thing because it's the most difficult thing to coach. And the guy that has the natural speed, you can work on him with a lot of things. I think even from Owen McLaughlin playing with Mayo, I think is a, you know, perfect example that he came with, you know, his underage background as such was cycling. but his just playing schools football was how he sort of came on the radar in the last 2 years. And you see, speed for him has helped give him a platform, and that guy will improve, I've no doubt, over the next 24 months, and hopefully he'll be a real option for Mayo into the future. But speed, I think, is the first thing now that's looked at by people when they're looking at new guys.
Kieran, do you think it was a good championship?
I do, absolutely. Considering everything that's gone on this year, you know, I really enjoyed, you know, watching the games. I thought there was some, you know, some great football on show. Thought it was, you know, you saw a lot of new faces. You saw different styles of play, you know, between more defensive, more attacking. You know, some great individual battles throughout every game. I certainly felt it was certainly brought myself great joy anyway throughout the whole year on what has been quite a difficult year. So absolutely. You know, I really enjoyed it. I think it's, as Oisín said there with the athleticism and stuff, I think, you know, it's only going to get better. And athleticism and speed from Stephen as well, like, you know, in relation to you know, the enhancing the game, you know, the skill and all that will be developed. But in relation to athleticism, and you know, endurance, I think that's going to really start to be pushed now again. The question is there around, you know, in 10 years time, how far can guys be pushed in relation to time and, you know, their work and, you know, outside of sport, you know, what, and that's a whole other conversation. I understand that, but I certainly think this year has been great. Some great talent on show. Pity Cork didn't kick on from a great victory over Kerry. I thought I'd just get that in there. you know, look, it was an exciting championship.
We will actually get this in here now. So let's do our, we've a massive award show with prizes for everyone who gets awards here, but player of the year, who's the best player in the championship this year?
I had Kilkenny for me. I thought he was, along with being, you know, central to how Dublin played our game, I thought, again, it came back to efficiency and quality between scoring. I thought he really added that strength to his bow this year in relation to, you know, he was getting on the scoreboard a lot more. But I just thought, again, off the ball, his ability to tackle and chase, I thought was outstanding throughout the whole year.
Any objections to Kieran Kilkenny, lads?
I couldn't believe the stat yesterday when I heard that he hadn't scored against Mayo previously until yesterday. Mm-hmm. I thought that was amazing. But I would have went for Brian Fenton, but like, it's very hard to argue with Kieran Kilkenny.
Yeah, I would have gone with Kieran Kilkenny, but I would say that Dublin, you know, I think the most influential outfield player is James McCarthy. And yesterday when they weren't at their best in the first half, I think James was the guy that was pulling fellas out. Absolutely. Like, I know myself, 2017, we had them on the ropes. James McCarthy stood up with 2 points in that second half. So, you know, he's been doing it over a decade now. So yeah, Kieran Kilkenny for the year. But the forwards always get these gigs anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think if the final had played out a little bit differently, Paddy Durkin would have been very close to it in the end. But if it, as it was, I think Kieran Kilkenny, young player or new player of the year. Oisín, do you want to lead this one out?
I go for Oisín Mullen. I thought he did enough all year to warrant that award. I think you know, we have to talk about it. He has pace. He's athleticism. He's learning the game. I don't know definitively what his best position is, but I imagine he's a future number six, and I just thought he was outstanding. It sounds like a contradiction whenever he spent most of the time on Conor McCallum, but I thought Oisín Mullen was very good, and I think that has added to the performance he's had all year. So Oisín Mullen for me,
lads.
Tommy Conroy for me. I know yesterday didn't go didn't go the way he would have liked us. But I thought Tommy, because I think when I reflect on Oisin's performance, I think his performance was better sort of out in the middle third of the field yesterday, where Bobby, if I was looking at him and thinking of him in the full back line. But I thought Tommy had a, you know, he assisted Killian well in relation to gain attention, and I think he has a bright future for himself.
Kieran,
both those names are the two that first sprung to mind as well. Just went with Oisin, based on I suppose his maturity that he showed. I thought as the championship went on, he just grew with every game. And just to mention Tommy, I think he's going to be an outstanding player as well. But I just thought, you know, still a small bit raw, as you'd expect for, you know, a young lad that, you know, is super talented. But in relation to Oisin, I just thought, you know, a couple of contests even, like, he showed a bit of grittiness that, you know, you wouldn't really expect from a younger guy. And I just thought, as Oisin said there, I think he's going to be a serious defender moving forward. There's so much room for improvement. And that's a scary thought for any team coming up against him if he's going to you.
It's 2-1, Stephen, so we'll go with Oisin Mullen on that one. The shock of the year. What was the shock of the year?
Oops. Stephen, do you want to title it?
No. No, it's further down the line for me, but anyway. I'll go with the first tip for me was the shock of the year, to be honest. I thought Cork, having come out of the Kerry game, were well primed to go and win it. And I think the shock is that, you know, Tipperary just dominated that game from full whistle, and I didn't see that coming. I knew Tip would give as good as they got, but I sort of, maybe the shock is Cork's performance, Ari Kieran, in the final. But, you know, Tip dominating that game probably was the shock for me.
Calvin, for me, on a continuous basis, from Monaghan to come back from 10 points down against Down and then finish it off against Donegal. So, Calvin, for me.
I'd be agreeing with you here, Oisin, on that one. I just thought, based on, you know, I suppose there was a lot of talk about, you know, Tip not fearing Cork and it potentially being a dangerous one because of the upset in the game previously, that, you know, something could have been coming. And as much as we tried to prepare for it, it didn't end up going away. But I thought Cavan, as Oisin said, throughout the whole championship, I thought were just a team that I didn't see, you know, really springing into the championship the way they did. And I thought consistently they just shocked me throughout the championship. So for me, yeah, I'll go with Cavan.
This is madness. I'm wondering what I'm doing here. Kerry got to the All-Ireland final last year. They held the greatest team of all time, brought them to a replay. They had just won the league and they go over to play a Division 3 team, an up-and-coming county. Oh,
come on.
Who stunned them. Surely that has to be the shock of the year, Cork beating Kerry.
No, I think we predicted that. I think myself and Kieran predicted that.
No, you most certainly didn't predict anything. You were too busy recovering from the shock of the Mead result. Which we'll be coming back to, by the way. The most exciting moment, or your favourite moment in the championship?
For me,
this is easy for you. Come on.
The Cork goal. It's easy enough one for me, I think. The Cork goal for me,
For as a, an exciting moment, it was the Cork. The last 60 seconds, I think, listened to it. I was worried. I thought Gerard Kenning was going to have a stroke when the ball went into the back of the net. But it was you know, two or three times they looked to have broken through in the shot, and then it was recycled, and then Luke Connolly had the shot, and Mark Keane did fabulous well to put it. But it was that was an exciting moment because it was like, what just happened, you know? That would be the exciting moment.
Yeah, same as that. I actually had the game recorded because I was away, and I come back into the house and think there was 5 or 10 minutes left in the game, and I was going to start watching from the start, and the wee fella said, no, you have to come in and you have to watch this. So watch the last 10 minutes of him, and it was unbelievable. I have to say, it was brilliant.
The referee of the year.
Easy for me. Paul Falloon. He refereed Cavan and Antrim, and he refereed on the 20 final yesterday. He's the best up-and-coming referee in the country by a mile. He lets the game go, and he's sensible, and he's just an excellent referee.
David Goff is the best referee in the the senior order at the moment. He's just very, very consistent, and I think he's he's not fooled by people. So I think David Goff remains the most consistent, best referee.
I'd have to agree with you there, Stephen. Just a big thing for me as a player, like, when you see a referee communicating to the player and he's completely aware of the decision he's making and he makes that absolutely clear to the player, I think that holds a lot of weight. But I think the way he referees the game, he doesn't get a whole lot wrong, which is admirable in a game that's so intense and so quick at the moment. But David Goff for me.
Pundit of the year.
Oisín.
Well, I couldn't pick. It was a toss up between two young fellas there, Kieran Sheehan and Oisín Campbell. So I went with Pat Spillane.
Yeah, we'll move quickly along. What is the worst rule in Gaelic football on the strength of this year's championship?
Steps rule. Like, there's no such thing as 4 steps. So, make it 6 steps. But let's not have a situation here whereby, you're coming back to situations whereby you're sort of saying at 5, 6 steps, a fella's breaking a tackle, sure, it's steps, or is it, or is the referee giving him because it's a good move, play on? There's nobody taking only 4 steps now, and I think that could bring more consistency if they went to 6 steps.
The back pass to the goalkeeper is pointless. I know it's a rule, but it does seem pretty pointless. And the advance mark, I think, could be dispensed with for all of the positivity it's given us,
Yeah, I actually thought about the back pass as well. Thought that's something that's just a little bit pointless. I see where they're going with it, but I don't know if it adds to what they're trying to get from it. But the back pass for me.
I think I tidy up the black card rules. I agree, by the way. I don't like the offensive mark at all, but the framing of the black card rule, where it's arguable that it was right not to send or not to give Johnny Cooper a black card yesterday, because the rule is to deliberately pull down an opponent. If it's deliberately pulled back when there's a goal scoring opportunity, it's a different rule. Equally, to deliberately collide with an opponent after he's played the ball away. So Robbie McDade, it was an arguable rule. I think the framing of those rules is really poor, and needs to be tidied up as to what it is. Now, the 2021 championship begins. The league begins in just exactly 2 months' time. Championship begins 2 months after that. It's Sunday, the 18th of July, 2021, for the All Ireland Senior Football Final, just over 6 months away. All things being equal, who will win that match?
Who will win the All Ireland next year?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to really put my neck in the lane here. I'm going to say Dublin.
Kieran.
I kind of have to say Cork, really, if I'm going to say anything. But look, it's very hard after watching Dublin yesterday and us debating it all year and, trying to find chinks in their armour and trying to, see if the pack is getting, closer to where they're at. But it's very, very hard to look past Dublin.
Stephen.
Yeah, well, look, again, this is no different than what has been the same tune for the last 6 years at this this time of the year, that they remain the standard bearers, and you know someone's going to take them down. There will be Dublin will be beaten some stage. Is it going to be in 2021? We don't know, but I think you know Mayo will improve next year. I'd like, you know, Galway, you know, are Galway the Galway pre-COVID or the post-COVID? I think to put more pressure on a Dublin, we need them to see them being the pre-COVID team. Cork, can they build on? Look, Kerry probably are the team that apart from Donegal, obviously, that have the Mayo. Those three teams are still the teams I think that have the ability to come at them. But there's going to be some fun in the north over the months of April to June, between Stair going into Armagh, the boys taking over in Tyrone. Monaghan, I think, will be an interesting development with Conor Laverty and Peter Donnelly gone. There'll be a big name, I'm sure, added to their ticket, and things will be tasty in Ulster, as they probably have been for the last 100 years anyway. But
I think Stephen's right. I think that the Tyrone one's the most interesting one for me, seeing how that develops.
Yeah, are they the ones who might actually jump to the head of the queue of contenders here?
Possibly. I think I've already heard a lot of good things, which for an Armagh man is fucking sickening. But but yeah, I've heard a lot of good things.
Surely they can only be having Zoom meetings at this time. It's a closed season, Oisín.
I've heard good things about those Zoom meetings. but I think players are reinvigorated. I think there's a lot of players who were on the sidelines for whatever reasons, and they are back in the fold. And he's got the biggest headache Tyrone have is to try and whittle it down to 35 or 30 players, you know.
The GAA sent out a document at the end of last week with the plans for next year and how it would not, the Super 8s aren't coming back. There is a qualifier system in the first line, and it is inter-county close season one is no return to collective senior inter-county training before January the 15th. I have to say that was quite amusing. This is our last show for now anyway. Thank you to Larry Ryan for everything he's done for us every week. Thank you also to Tony Lean for making it happen. Thanks to the guests who came on the show over the last 3 months, especially Stephen, who's come on twice. Huge thanks to Renault for making all this possible. And finally, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat to these two lads, Kieran and Oisín, every week. And hopefully we can all get to sit in the same room sometime and continue the conversation. Happy Christmas, everyone.
With Renault, official car partner of the GAA, taking the passion of a nation to a whole new gear.